Hey everyone, welcome to Journey to the West. I'm Jay, and today I'm joined with Sen. And we're here for a special pod episode. V isn't here today because she has a lot of personal stuff to deal with. So it's just going to be the two of us. And we'd like to talk about basically decolonizing Asian feminism. And this is a huge and loaded topic, so we're not going to get to everything today. But we just wanted to begin that conversation and start talking about certain elements that we felt were important. Because recently, an article came out on Pro-Asian Voice called What is Asian Love? And it basically deconstructs Asian feminism, as well as world liberation movements, and basically tries to offer us the pieces to put together our own version of feminism that is actually meant to liberate us. Because there's a lot of problems with the current day incarnation of Asian feminism. We have our critiques, and I'd like to pass this over to Sen to begin talking about those.
It's kind of a loaded topic, so apologies if this gets rambly, but I think I can speak for like all of us, even V, that Asian feminism, the problem with it is it's mainly built on the template of white feminism and not much has changed. And one of like the biggest things I've seen is how feminism tends to view like men and women as a dichotomy, and how we have to bring down the patriarchy, which is true, but the problem is we tend to take aim at like Asian men predominantly and not white men. And if you look at how other feminisms operate, like black feminism and indigenous feminisms, they feel a sense of responsibility in how they portray their own racial group, because for them, race is part of the feminism and it's like centered within the feminism. Whereas I feel like when we adopt white feminism, it doesn't think about race in that same way, which is why I'll often see people criticizing Asian patriarchy or attributing a lot of
like toxic patriarchal behavior to culture, like making it essential to Asian culture, as though this is not some global phenomenon.
To sum it up, I think that the problem with our feminism is we put it diametrically opposed to our own men. And it shouldn't just be Asian men. It should be the patriarchy as a whole. And the most, you know, vicious kind is obviously the white patriarchy. And I feel like we aren't critical of it enough. It's not like we as like a people can just fucking take it down by ourselves, and it's gonna be like an arduous process of us trying to fight it. But I think us being fairly uncritical of it is part of like a really huge problem that we have.
And I would say that this attitude toward the white patriarchy is a pretty new one. Because I remember reading things like the Manifesto for Ghidra, which is an Asian American radical protest zine that had a co-ed staff. And the women there understood that women's liberation, especially Asian women's liberation, is intimately tied to the liberation of Asian men as well. So they explicitly said, you know, we stand in solidarity with other third world minorities who are seeking freedom from the imperialism and white supremacy structures, as well as you know, men and women in other nations who are fighting this off. It was not used as a tool to denigrate our own community. Like, it was used to unite us in a common fight. And in that sense, you're not positioning yourselves as diametrically opposed. You're positioning yourselves as like two parts of, or at least together in this common movement and this common struggle, which makes it a lot easier to negotiate with each other how we want to be treated. So like, you can take care of things like, you know, toxic behaviors in your own community when you understand that you're on the same side, which I think is the fundamental difference in then and now. Because today I don't see a lot of women acknowledging that Asian men are oppressed, that Asian men experience racism. And this might sound ridiculous because like, yeah, oh, you're discriminated because you're portrayed as like not sexual people, blah, blah, blah. But that's...
It is a part of it. But you can't even say that like it's any different because we're all in the same boat. Like, we're still getting racially like abused, attacked.
Yeah.
We're still part of the same racial group. We're all getting called chink, you know, or gook or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So even though like a lot of our specific like gendered racism is different, we're still in it together. Like, you can't say that, like, in the past, it would have taken both of us to get to where we are, to get our human rights, because, like, mm-hmm. feminism back in the day wasn't inclusive of, like, other women. It was just white women feminism. I guess going on another tangent, I think, like, a really good example I remember reading about was, like, when Indigenous feminism in Australia specifically, how a lot of, like, Indigenous feminism was really careful about how, again, they portray their own men, because one of the hugest problems, like, Aboriginal men go through, and it kind of is a community problem, is, like, alcoholism and mm-hmm. domestic violence. And it's very easy for, like, you know, white politicians and the white media to take that and twist it and make it seem like it's the patriarchal Aboriginal men, like, oppressing the women. And a lot of women uh-huh. fight that narrative. And they talk about how colonialism is the reason why a lot of the issues that they have, including alcoholism, is, an like, I think that still persists today. So, again, there's a responsibility to be, again, in good faith and to bring up these issues when within our communities and to talk to each other about them, and instead of making some article talking about to a white audience about how, like, oppressed we are and how victimized we feel. Like, it's kind of like a difficult thing, to be honest,
yeah.
to talk about, because it, like, let's not pretend that misogyny doesn't exist in, like, the Asian community.
Because, like, clearly it does. But that doesn't mean that the way we go about healing that is by just denigrating all of the men in our community. Like, we need to actually work together on this and agree on a certain way to treat each other, right? It's not this thing where, like, okay, well, this is wrong, so you have to stop doing that, but the ways in which that I'm hurting you, whether that's intentional or not, I don't have to change my own behavior. Like, this has to be a negotiation if we want to live in harmony and we want to actually have parity, right? Because otherwise it's just like this struggle for power, for one being better than the other. And that's some bullshit. That is basically white feminism, and that is what Western gender constructs are built upon. The reason that they're so rigid, like these gender roles, are because it's about power. It's about securing power. And when you see white women using their position to oppress other minorities, they're wielding the power that they know they have. So, like, one example is, you know, white women will be all about having agency and being powerful and, you know, not being held to anybody else's standards, blah, blah, blah. And then at the drop of a hat, they'll immediately switch to, oh, I'm the victim here. I'm being victimized. I'm a woman. I'm not strong enough. I need your help. Look at these minorities. They're oppressing me. Like, that's some shit that I've started seeing in Asian women who are claiming to be feminists and pulling this shit too. And that's not right, because white women are using the power that they know that they've acquired being white and their adjacency to white male power. And we should not be doing that. We're not white. We don't actually, I mean, it might seem like we're gaining something in the short term, but in the long term, we lose our authenticity and our autonomy and our identity. Which is why this has to be a part of decolonization. Like, you need to actually not subscribe to Western feminism if you want to decolonize. Or, like, you can take some basic ideas, but you have to change them in the way that Black and Indigenous feminists have. You have to be sensitive to your own communities and how we are all oppressed under the same banner of white supremacy. Which brings us to our next topic. In order to do that, in order to actually achieve liberation, in order to have real progress, we need to actually make demands in the real world. It can't just be this internal thing, because too often we have this phenomenon of feel-good feminism where people just speak empty platitudes and shit like, oh, girl power, and yeah, fight the patriarchy. But the people saying these things have no idea what that actually entails. And it's usually a focus on improving yourself internally and has nothing to do with pushing in the outside world, which makes absolutely no sense, because oppression, especially when it's racial, comes from outside of you. So, like, you can work on yourself all you want, but that's not going to stop somebody from hate criming you because you're Asian, you know?
I guess, like, what I've seen mostly when, I guess, Asian feminism has been talked about, or when Asian women come together to talk about racism, it's not highly critical of the social structures of racism within our society, like on an institutional or systemic level. Like, it's not trying to hit home at those very real things, and it doesn't really think about the everyday woman. And also not just the everyday woman, but also working class women. Like, how much feel good, like, oh, you just need to believe in yourself and you just need to, like, love yourself and blah, blah, blah. Like, how much can that really help a woman who's working in a low wage job, who's getting, like, discriminated against every day? Like, you have to actually change the reality around you. And the problem is when we tell people to, like, imagine, like, a society where we're, like, treated as human, it's even hard for that to be a thing. But the thing is, we have to take our imagination and what we want and turn it into action, and not just this, like, we just need to feel good and we just need to decolonize our minds. Like, we need to decolonize our mindset of not folding to white supremacy and being okay with it. But then we also have to take that and think about how we are entitled to our human rights and entitled to autonomy and entitled to holding certain political positions within our communities. Because I don't know how America is, but I feel like with a lot of enclaves, it's still white people at the top. right? Still white people governing our areas. That's one thing. That's just one of like so many things that we could demand and we could want. And it can't just be in the form of like our image as media representation. That's part of it. But it also has to be like within legislation and within like governing bodies as well.
Yeah, we need some real shit. Because there's only so much self-improvement that you can do. And there's a limit to how that will affect your reality. Like, speaking about the enclaves thing, I technically live in an enclave, but it's nothing compared to an area in which there are actually Asians in government, because we're still run by white people. We're probably like 30% Asian at this point, but at every institution is still run by white people, like the majority of the police force, the firefighters, EMTs, the mayor, the governing, everywhere. So that's not really a self-governing community in that sense. And I was trying to explain this to somebody, actually, and they did not understand me and accused me of being militant. And that really speaks to how foreign an idea it is for us to actually have autonomy and to govern ourselves, even in that small way of having representatives in government, that this idea is so unpalatable to people that they can't even grasp it, which is really sad. There's a lot of internalized racism, internalized sexism, internalized imperialism going on in a lot of Asians in diaspora. And it's definitely not enough to just decolonize your own mind. You have to decolonize your space too.
I know, that sounds so fucking dumb, because like, if you know the history of enclaves, it was literally to herd us into one area because they don't want to fucking see us anywhere else.
Yeah, we were like the trash of the city, so.
Yeah, it's just like a farmer herding his sheep into one area. Like, that's what we are. We're cattle. We're not humans. So the fact that they still hold the reins is kind of indicative of, again, the white power structure and how we're, you know, subordinate. The problem with a lot of Asian people is like, when we don't have this sense of entitlement, unlike white male entitlement, which is like they think that everything is theirs. But for us, we can't even conceive a reality where we're at the top of our own community. We're not even like, I don't even think people want are thinking about having an Asian president, but we can't even think of like an Asian like councilor or mayor for our own areas. Like, I know maybe California is a little bit better in some areas, but it's not like that in other places, especially around the world.
And like, even so, it's pretty clear that when governments want the appearance of minority representation, they often just pick the people for diversity points, and they don't actually pick people who are focused on fighting for their own communities and representing their own communities. It's just like, oh, you're an Asian face, so you're in. Cool.
Oh, fucking Republican or like right-wing Asians. Like, they try to plant those reps before to try and get votes. I've seen it and I'm just like, it doesn't fucking work.
Yeah.
We know. We know what these people are really after.
So I guess, in summary, at the end of all of this, and speaking to making our communities our own, truly our own, a question that I've been thinking about for a long time is, how can we build a community that we want to be a part of? And I think for a lot of people, this means feel good, you know, like boba and watching Asian media and just like hanging out with other Asian people. But it's got to be deeper than that. As we've expressed before, it has to be something really concrete that binds us together. And I feel like this can only really happen if we decide to build together and build kind of like an institution. So we need to agree what we want this to look like. We need to agree that this has to be for the benefit of all of us and not just half of us. And we need to decide what it is that we want and how we can achieve those goals. So basically, we can't keep going on just elevating ourselves. Asian feminism needs to account for white supremacy and the way that it also oppresses Asian men. And Asian masculinity also needs to account for how Asian women are oppressed and how together we can work to shake off that yoke of oppression. Because ultimately we are on the same side. We don't have to be at odds. And I feel like a lot of the reason that we are at odds is by design, because divide and conquer. It makes it a lot easier to break a people if they're not united. So I would like to see a lot more good faith and people reaching out and actually choosing to build together and working stuff out. And not just in discussions. I'm sure discussion is like the first step. But we need to move beyond that too and agree on concrete things to implement. Like what is our list of demands? And we haven't even thought about that yet. Like this is an open conversation. This is something that is meant to evolve as our needs evolve. And this is a really big thing. So it's not something that we can just cover in a half hour, yeah. You know?
Well, I think at the crux of it, it should always be focused on fighting white supremacy, because that is the mechanism that is, you know, oppressing us the most. So, Again, we should always address, like, problems within our community in very genuine ways. But I feel like every time I do see it being addressed, it's used in some argument against someone. Like, well, Asian men do this and Asian men do that. Or you do this and you do that. And if you really cared about these issues, you would have talked about it in another conversation and you wouldn't bring it up in random like debates to take down your opponent or to like as a character assassination. So
yes,
I don't like it being used in those ways, because you don't genuinely care about the people affected. Like when people bring up like intimate partner violence or deportations or anything, it's like you shouldn't use that as ammo or pawns in your little chessboard. It's not how it works.
Yeah, that is not good faith. Because like if you're bringing that to the table for that reason, it's clear that you're not there to be productive. You just want to like win whatever verbal argument this is, which doesn't accomplish anything, really.
Especially when you're talking about people that can't speak for themselves. Like, you also have to realize your position. Like, a lot of us aren't... We can only speak for them, but we also have to realize that we aren't them either. So when we're talking about, like, working class people or, you know, people getting deported, we have to remember our position and not speak over them.
We're actually a bunch of women are working on an article as a companion piece to What is Asian Love to begin to define what it would mean to be an Asian feminist in this day and age, accounting for, you know, having an eye on liberation and healing the rifts in our community and moving forward together, making concrete demands and all of that. And I think even that article is not going to cover everything, but it's going to be a start. When it's going to come out eventually, we might mention it later, but we'll definitely be promoting it on Twitter as well. But yeah, we're just tired of things not going anywhere because people are yelling at each other and not actually speaking with each other and not building with each other. And as much as I enjoy giving a voice for Asian women, especially in this pod, I also am kind of proud of the work that I've been doing at Pro Asian Voice because we're modeling what it would look like for Asian men and Asian women to work together instead of bicker with each other on common goals and have similar priorities. So I just hope that other people can understand how important that is and model it themselves and to start their own enterprises, their own institutions, their own organizations that can basically accomplish the same thing. Because it's a lot easier when multiple people who have this common goal are working in their own way to achieve it. So I guess that's our future goal here, but we're not doing this to like shit on people. We're doing this because we see that there's a problem and there's no progress and we want progress to be made. So I hope that despite all of our rambling, that people listening to this understand where we're coming from and what our goals are and can share in that goal and help us achieve it. Like I would encourage people to, even if you aren't somebody who writes things or does podcasts and whatever, to be supportive in your own way. If there are people local to you who you feel are doing a great job, support them. Volunteer your time or, you know, your money if you have that. Or just signal boost stuff that you think is actually accomplishing something. And I think it's important to move beyond entertainment as much as I enjoy media, because that's just like one tiny piece of the entire puzzle. And I hope that's what people take away from this pod. So before we officially sign off, we have some iTunes reviews that we didn't get to last time from September. So I guess we can start with the earlier one by Rocket 2 Stars from USA on September 10th. Pretty cool podcast with Why Asian Women Are Silent on Online Spaces was the best one. Thank you. We hope that you're still listening and that you have a new favorite, hopefully, because we've made a lot of pods since then. Thanks for giving us a review. There's also a review by Infinitely Negative, also from USA. This one's a bit of a longer comment. For someone who is interested in topics related to the Asian diaspora, this podcast provides some unique perspectives. They also mention that there are some terms that we use that it would help to have knowledge of before actually listening, like gaslighting and virtue signaling. That's a good point, and we're going to try to be better about that because we understand not everybody is familiar with these terms. Thank you for your thanks. Thank you for your review. We're glad that people are listening because sometimes it feels like we don't have a lot of feedback. So it's great to hear this stuff. So thanks for hearing us ramble. We hope that made sense to you. We hope that you guys understand what we mean and that we are definitely coming in good faith. Stay tuned for that article and for our next pods. If you want to connect with us, I am J_MARAAN on Twitter and Sen.
Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Sen. You can find me on Twitter, SEN_TINT. There's also that article we kept mentioning called Asian Love on Per Asian Voice, which is required readings for this podcast. So you should really go over there and read it. It's a bit lengthy, but it gives you a lot of examples in history and like may give you a better idea of what we're talking about and what imagined realities we're talking about.
Yeah, we'll drop the link in the description. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.